The Adonis Audio Experience. Hello, everyone. Before we get into it, I just want to thank each and every person who has tuned in and listened to this podcast. You have no idea what that means to me. This was a project that started as just simple fun. It continues to be simple fun. And more importantly, it's an outlet for me to express my thoughts, points of view, and just ultimately, it's creating connection with many, many people. So my ask is that you share this with one friend or family member that you feel would enjoy talking about sports, life, and many other things in between. So again, feel free to share this podcast with a friend or family member. I look forward to sharing more thoughts and ideas and just anecdotal stuff that happens in everyday life. So stay tuned. The Last Dance, episodes 3 and 4. We're about to get into it. One thing that I really enjoyed was how they went through the progression with Dennis Rodman, how he was just a young adult living in the projects, no father, then the Bad Boys Pistons, young and innocent, just evolving and being that enforcer and just extreme athleticism that he had. And, you know, to later getting picked up by the Spurs, where you started seeing more of that extroverted personality with the hair and just being, you know, that bad boy, which I guess was more exposed with the Spurs because you didn't have as many ruthless players like you did on the Pistons.
Yeah,
MJ retiring and, you know, then coming back and Dennis Rodman joining the team and, you know, Pippen and MJ keeping them in control. And then obviously it ends in that 97-98 story where they go to Vegas and they just have to bring back Dennis from his vacation, which, you know, that's kind of like a brief synopsis of how these two episodes went down. But let's really dig into it and let's start at the beginning, man. What was your take with these with this Dennis Rodman episode?
You know, I mean, I've heard so much about Rodman now because I also saw the Bad Boys documentary. It came out like 3 or 4 years ago when he gets a lot of publicity in that.
That's true.
I mean, he's such a complex guy. I mean, he doesn't go to college till he's 22. He's like a baggage handler at an airport, and then he grows like 6 inches when he's like 19, and he goes to like this Division II school, Southeast Oklahoma, you know, and just blows up and, you know, gets discovered, and that's where, like, you know, the mythical creature that is Dennis Rodman, you know, was born.
Yeah,
you know, and he was, you know, he's an integral piece to those Piston teams.
You know, it's so crazy because Isaiah in the interview, he gets into it where he's like, you know, Dennis was this beautiful person when he first came to the Pistons and he was just so innocent and he had this naivete about the world. But obviously he found out pretty quick what his powers were and what life was all about, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I heard Shaquille O'Neal talking about this in an interview where he talks about when guys come into the league with one set of values and some guys get into the league and they get, to use his words, they get turned around, you know, money, the fame, you know, the women, you know, and they weren't even making crazy money back then, but, you know, it's still, you know, comparatively speaking, he was doing all right.
Well, the exposures, is huge.
The exposure, you know, and they start winning, you know, and then I liked what Isaiah said about him basically saying the huge differences between Dennis Rodman, the Piston, and Dennis Rodman, the Bull. That Dennis was like this this quiet, didn't go out, didn't drink with Detroit. You know, he never got in trouble or anything. You know?
Yep, yep.
And then he goes to the Bulls, you know, when we got the dyed hair, we got the Vegas trip, you know. Him shutting down at the beginning of the year when Scottie's not there until I like that little story where Jordan says, you know, he came to my room and asked for a cigar, and like that was his like complex way of apologizing for screwing that game up.
Yeah, because in the 97-98 season, he let him down early on in the season, and Jordan was like, "Man, I was counting on you, and you know, you let me down, man." And that was big heart on Dennis to sit down with Jordan, because Jordan was not easy on his teammates, man. He was relentless.
No, he really was. He really was. And, you know, Rodman just, you know, but he really fits that team so perfectly because he, you know, he took all the, I mean, I love that one. And we're going kind of back and forth here between years, but it's our, you know, that one series, he's guarding Shaq on the Magic and he's giving up like 100 pounds, and he is completely giving it to Shaq, and Rodman's like 6'8".
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. You know, people forget when Rodman first came out and he played with those Pistons, Rodman would defend Jordan and Jordan would defend Rodman. Like, Rodman was a wing defender that also defended the post. That's how versatile and strong he was. Till as he became more of a seasoned veteran, he just started dedicating his time to just big men. So he had to deal with guys who had 50, 100 pounds on him, and he would do it in a way like you've never seen before in your life. So, you know, Rodman was absolutely a freak. He was absolutely a head case. And, you know, one thing that I do appreciate about Rodman is that I don't think you'll ever see that level of athleticism and that level of commitment to a certain craft for the foreseeable future. Like, he was a scorer early on in his days, right? And
yeah.
And then he, you know, he just told himself, listen, if I'm going to come into the NBA and dominate, I'm going to grab every rebound. I'm going to defend the best player on the court because that's what's going to make me great. And, you know, that's one of the things I truly appreciate with Rodman. But, you know, back to those 80s Pistons, man. I mean, you know, what was your take on the whole thing? Just getting into the Pistons in particular and the way they won those championships and how they carried themselves and all that kind of shit that went down.
I think they kind of get a raw deal. I mean, they're a good team. They're a good team, you know, and everybody just wants to tell you that they won two championships because Bill Laimbeer kept putting people in the third row. But, I mean, they won 63 games that first year they won a title. Yeah. They go to 3 straight finals. They mm-hmm. go to 5 straight Eastern Conference finals, you know, and they should have won the 88 finals. They kind of got a short, you know, the short end of the stick in that series.
Yeah.
You know, and because, you know, Jordan brings up the not shaking hands. And
yeah,
I mean, I went back and watched the end of series in the 80s. I watched the end of the 85 finals when the Lakers beat the Celtics. No handshake. The 87 finals when the Lakers beat the Celtics, nobody shook hands. Same thing. You know, when Detroit got beat by the Lakers in 88, nobody really shook hands. And Larry Bird came out this week and said, you know, when the game was over, you know, I didn't want to shake Magic's hand either way. He was like, you know, there was like some serious hatred there. And I think that like this is like they're paying like a humongous punishment for a 10-cent crime, you know, and I just don't think that that's really fair.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So totally agree. But to put it into some context, Jordan, in the last 2 years that he got beat up by the Pistons, he shook their hands. He gave them that respect. And the Lakers and the Celtics, there was a serious rivalry and hate. And you could say, you know what? Maybe the Pistons thought that the Bulls and the Pistons were what the Lakers and the Celtics were, where they could display that same type of raw emotion, raw hatred. And that's all well and good, but this was a new league that was changing. This league was changing to the tune and the beat of Michael Jordan. And a lot of people don't want to realize that and they don't want to accept it, but it's the truth. People, even on other teams, were following this guy's command. He was taking the league by storm, and he did it by a regimented process, the absolute pursuit to winning, but also the absolute sportsmanship. And that's the piece that I feel that was missing with those Pistons teams. And you may disagree with this point, but at the end of the day, if your opponent, like Jordan was to the Pistons, shakes your hands after you physically beat the shit out of them, and you just walk with your head down, ducked away, there's got to be some ramifications to that, no?
You know, I like your point that that maybe the times are changing and they just didn't change fast enough. Because, you know, I mean, and I wanted to mention just one last series. When the Pistons beat the Lakers, when they won their first championship, also, you know, nobody shook any hands there. And I mean, I heard an interview with Bill Laimbeer this week and one with Isaiah, where Isaiah's kind of regretful because he's like, listen, if we were going to be talking about this 30 years later, we would have just shook their hands. And that's fine. But I kind of like the way Bill Laimbeer went about it. He's like, listen, we handed the Bulls the torch the way it got handed to us. You know, the Celtics ran off the floor when we finally beat them, you know, and they kind of just thought that was the way. On top of the fact that Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan said very derogatory things about the Pistons. And honestly, I might not want to shake your hands either if you say that our championships, you know, didn't raise the level of the league. You know, we did not help move basketball in a forward direction, you know, and I'm paraphrasing. You know, and he, you know, they really went after like their identity as a team, and everybody played physical back then. I mean, it's like, it's that classic footage of Kevin McHale clotheslining Kurt Rambis, and for some reason, that's considered competitive. But when the Pistons did it, you know, it was something else, and they just, well, you know, they just really weren't well liked. You know, they were not well liked.
Yeah, the whole team. Again, I get to the point that the league was changing. You know, Kurt Rambis is not a world beater, you know, and if him and McHale, two, you know, unathletic power forwards / centers want to go at it with each other, they could do that. But the league was seeing the likes of Dominique Wilkins, Clyde the Glide Drexler, Michael Jordan, and to a certain extent, Isaiah Thomas. So the league was seeing a growth of wing players who were introducing a different level of athleticism that was evolving and growing the game. So to Jordan's point, I think that, yeah, the Pistons were not growing the game. The Pistons were staying in a very stale, stagnant position where it was just very unathletic. And at the end of the day, If you need to push a guy with two hands and almost end his career, that's not the brand of basketball that I want to watch. It really isn't. And you saw that a lot. We're not talking about hard fouls that if you drive up and I bang against your chest and you stand your ground, I totally expect you to do that. But if I'm running to the hoop and you literally are not playing the ball and you put two hands on me while I'm in the air to drop and I break a knee, a foot, an ankle, you know, what if I break my collarbone because you did that? I don't know. I just see it a little different. And when the big guys used to bang into each other like that in the early 80s and in the late 70s to a certain extent, yeah, maybe that was the nomenclature. That was the way you went about it. But as soon as these wing players started growing the game and the popularity of the game, you needed to adjust at some point. And that's my only point, is that the Pistons were maybe a couple years behind the curve. But to their point, they did win those championships with their style, and they were playing within the rules of the game at the time, where today you could never get away with any of that shit. Even Rodman said that.
Of course. No, you can never get away with that now. You never could. I just, you know.
Yeah.
It's still, I mean, that style of basketball did lag into a decent part of the 90s with your beloved Knicks.
Fair enough.
The Pacers with the Davis boys. I mean, there Fair was enough. Some of that. The Heat, those were wars. The Miami teams, when Fair you know, enough. Riley jumped shit with Lonzo.
Yep.
With Alonzo Mourning. I just, you know, I mean,
yep.
I get it. I mean, and honestly, they probably, most of them, except for maybe Bill Laimbeer, would probably just shake their hands because they just, I just didn't understand how they got so much grief over this when, you know, and
yeah,
I mean, and forgive me for saying this. If we ever lived in the parallel universe where Jordan got picked off by the Jazz or something in one of those series,
yeah,
and he didn't shake their hands, the public would spin it. In my humble opinion, they would spin it in him being like the ultimate competitor, you know, like
that's I don't so, know. I don't know about that. That's a stretch because he didn't. Uh-huh. You know, so this whole hypothetical thing about Jordan not shaking someone's hand, he didn't, though. Jordan was a competitor and he was ruthless, but he played within the spirit that the game is meant to be played in, which is you're still tough. Because look, Jordan's teammates didn't even like him because he was too tough. Jordan's teammates were like, man, this guy expected a certain standard, and he knew that if he didn't push us to a certain level, that we mentally might not be able to survive the playoff runs of the Detroit Pistons, of the 90s Knicks, you know? Because to your point, yeah, the 90s Knicks were like a version of the Pistons that were maybe one Isaiah Thomas away from just being, you know, a legendary team, I guess.
Yeah, definitely won in the championship because, I mean, they almost won one anyway.
Yeah.
You know, fair enough. I mean, you've made some really good points. I just, you know, I feel like it's definitely a little personal with them. And, you know, and then they allude to the fact that somebody, I don't know who wants to take, nobody's going to take ownership over this, but somebody kept Isaiah Thomas off the Dream Team. If it's Jordan, if it's Magic, it's absolute lunacy that he's not on that team, you know. And I mean, he's no worse than like the fifth best player in the NBA at that time. You got 12 slots, and fine, you know, they had to take a college kid, and they took Christian Laettner over Shaq at the time, which also looks kind of like a crazy decision right now. But the college career that Christian Laettner had,
he was the best.
He was the best, you know, and nobody, you know, you didn't know yet that Shaq was going to go to the league and go.
Yeah, go ape shit. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I mean, he was definitely kept off the Dream Team. And, you know, so, I mean, I think he paid for it. He paid for that.
He paid for his sins, for sure.
In a big way.
In a huge way, because that 92 Dream Team, that's always going to be remembered where the greatest players came together and just dominated the world. And to not have Isaiah Thomas on that team is taking a little bit of history away from that 80s, 90s mix, that you can't mention 80s, 90s basketball without mentioning Isaiah Thomas, without a doubt. And, you know, I'm not saying that the players did this, but Isaiah Thomas didn't get along with Magic. Isaiah Thomas didn't get along with Jordan. And at the time, Magic knew that he was passing the torch to Jordan. When the Lakers lost to Jordan, he said, you know what? If I'm going to lose, I'm glad that I'm losing to Michael Jordan, because that's how it should be lost, to the guy who's carrying the game forward. And, you know, the NBA was in a very odd transition. And, you know, I think Isaiah Thomas just got caught up in a very strange transition and shift in the league from guys like Magic and Bird to Jordan. And no one really cared much for the Bad Boys Pistons, though you still have to write that history because they won two championships. And to a greater extent, Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, definitely. And one more thing about the Dream Team, one person that never really gets mentioned that should have had his, you would assume would have had his back, the coach of the team is his coach, you know, and he's no longer with us, so nobody can ask him. But I mean, that's your coach, and you're still not on the team. So, I mean, I mean, they definitely have to be, you know, but for them to tell, you know,
that's a,
listening to interviews and them saying that, you know, nobody kept them off the team. I was like, just don't tell me that, you know.
Yeah.
You can just tell us, you know, we're not going to find out. Fine. But, you know, he belongs on that team and he's not there, you know. And unfortunately, the odd man out probably would have been my guy, John Stockton. So I guess it worked out the way, you know, it worked out all right.
You know, it's funny because, and we'll get into Rodman in a second, but Stockton was a great passer, but now watching him in that Dream Team is a little odd because Stockton just doesn't hold a candle to Isaiah. He just really doesn't. Like, Isaiah was at that time in particular, clearly the better player. So to watch Stockton on that team was surprising, but listen, I don't want to disrespect Stockton. He was an all-time passer, and he was in the mix for many years, and I know you're a diehard Utah fan, but, you know, that is a smack in the face. Stockton's there. My coach is coaching the team, and I'm Isaiah Thomas, and I'm not on that team.
You know, I mean, listen, it's a discussion. Isaiah's better. I mean, Isaiah's clearly better. Isaiah's the clear number one choice on a championship-winning team. You know, Utah hadn't even been that close yet at that time because, exactly. You know, they don't
– yeah.
You know, and Karl Malone's probably the best guy on that team. And they had, you know, but that team was always missing something. They're kind of like the Knicks. They always just needed that third, you know,
that second,
third guy that they could just go get them 15 a night.
Correct. They never had that.
Through that person for a while. Yeah, they never had it. They just never had it.
Yeah. No, you know what? That is a fair assessment. They were close in that sense. Although I think from a defensive standpoint, Patrick Ewing was just better defensively than Karl Malone, even though that would be the only differences I would see. But, you know, Malone definitely ran the ball well. He come off of picks. He could go in transition. So I don't want to take away from Karl. But, you know, with Rodman, though, it's crazy how talent supersedes anything. If you're talented, you could get away with anything. And one thing that the documentary doesn't get into is that it doesn't go into the darkness of Rodman. And you know what? At the end of the day, a documentary needs to expose things that you don't understand, that you don't see. And this documentary kind of just regurgitated the stuff that we already knew. We knew Rodman was a rock star, and he was also a great basketball player with the crazy hair and the crazy personality. And, you know, not growing up with a father figure, Rodman, you know, looked to his coaches like his father figures. And they all speak about that, including Phil Jackson, how they had this kind of Zen Buddhism connection in their lives. And they got to, you know, that's how they formed their bond. And the fact is that Rodman got a lot of rope, and this dude goes to Vegas with Carmen Electra, just probably rolling his ass balls deep into crazy music, drinking for days. He's just probably laid out naked in some hotel, and then miraculously Pippen and Jordan show up to Vegas and just scoop him up out of a hotel room and bring him back to the basketball court. I mean, come on.
I mean, how great is that? I love when the reporter asked him. I love when the reporter asked Jordan, and he came back in 2 days. He's like, "Oh no, he didn't come back in 2 days. We have to go get him out of bed." You imagine that? That's just, you know, that's crazy. I did love that Phil Jackson part. They really showed his brilliance there. How he knew how to handle different people. I mean, because a different coach is like, "You're not going to Vegas." I mean, even the great, and this is a different sport. It's not exactly apples to apples, but you know. But, like, even the great Bill Belichick, you imagine Gronkowski's like, "Hey, you know, we're in the playoffs already anyway. I need 2 days, you know." And he's not going to pick a game day. He's going to pick, like, 2 days of practice. Belichick's never letting him go. Yeah. And in this, you know, day and age, you know, somebody's going to find out now. It seems like that was almost kept under wraps back then.
Oh, yeah.
But Phil Jackson knowing what everybody needed, you know, and he's like, "He needs this right now. And we're going to get him back.
Yeah.
We're going to get him back refreshed and strong." You know, that really showed the brilliance of his coaching. And you know what? I mean, you have to give it to him because, you know, Jordan never won until he took over, and Kobe and Shaq never won until he took over. And it was kind of the right place in the right time where, you know, Kobe got those 3 or 4 years of development, and this is not going to be a Lakers, you know, thing, but just talking about Phil. And, you know, everybody played their best under his watch, and that's just, you know, that's he knew what Rodman needed, and he came back. And how great is that little part there where Jordan's talking about the practice? He's like, well, Rodman's got to get back in shape now.
Oh, my God.
So they run the Indian mile.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess Jordan forgot what a physical freak he was. And when he takes off, he's like, oh, it took us 4 laps to catch him. You know, that is
crazy
right there.
Rodman passed all of them, and it took him 4 laps to catch Rodman. And that was Rodman showing him, hey, listen, I got this. And Jordan respected that about him. He was like, listen, if you could take a few days off like that and come back and still outrun all of us, I mean, you could tell Jordan had a lot of respect of his athleticism. But, you know, here's the other part, man. Just real talk. Jordan goes to Vegas with Pippen, and they just go to pick up Rodman. Come on, man.
You know, I never thought about that. He kind of just slid that in there. I never thought that, you know, they probably went at the same time Rodman did, and they were just doing two very different things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Jordan, no secret, likes to gamble.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So I can imagine, you know, he spent, you know, 36 hours in front of a, you know, a blackjack table, and, you know, and...
Exactly. This whole, but here's the shit, is that Jordan is still insulated by the media. He really is. Jordan is still insulated, and people do not let the darkest stories come out, even in this day and age. And because in my opinion, if Jordan had to play in the social media age, I think he would be 10 times bigger than what you see even on LeBron James, just because of Jordan's attitude and his overall pursuit to greatness. You've seen great players like LeBron and Durant just not take the same approach or the same attitude. You just flat out see it. They're different people. And you know what? That's okay. We all evolve. But the part that I'm still just so confused is the affinity and love that the media has for Jordan till this day, when they know that they're not going to get crucified by some big media giant because they said something bad about Jordan. So I'm surprised. And, you know, there was negative press towards Jordan. I'm not going to say that there wasn't. But the fact that Jordan could go to Vegas and have like a simple just one-liner, oh, we wanted to pick up Rodman, and that was it. It's like, it's just a classic story of how Jordan has lived a Cinderella kind of storybook, even though he was a, you know, degenerate gambler. I heard this guy would gamble on what suitcases were coming out first from the conveyor belt when they would land from the airport. Like, he was obsessed with gambling to not have any of that story really come out, like the really dark underbelly of all that gambling obsession. I just think it does a little injustice to the documentary, because those are the parts that in today's age we want to know about. We know you're the greatest basketball player. We saw you on TV. Shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they say that, you know, history gets told by the winners. So, you know, he gets to tell his version of it. You know, I hope that maybe in the next couple episodes, because the timeline that they're following, I mean, they have to touch on the retirement, you know, in the next, probably by the sixth episode. And maybe he gets into it a little bit. I mean, you know, probably not. But I mean, yeah, to what you say, I mean, you imagine like LeBron James on an off day in the middle of a playoff run, if the Knicks ever make the playoffs again, and he runs down to Atlantic City, I mean, he got such a pass for that. Things like, I mean, it's true.
Imagine J.R. Smith losing his shit and is like, I need to go to freaking Vegas. And then LeBron goes and picks up J.R. Smith. You're not going to see any of that story on social media? Hell no.
You'll see the entire thing, and you know,
you'll see the women, you'll see the party favors, you'll see the gambling, you'll see everything, because, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure that they're protected to a certain degree as well, but we've seen cases where, you know, these stories just pop out, so these athletes have to have an extra layer of protection from themselves, where, you know, Jordan, he got that from the media. They just, they loved him.
You know, they loved him. He got protected. It's just, you know, I don't understand. I mean, for a guy that he was kind of private, it's not like he really gave a lot in interviews. But, you know, I just, you know, when they decide that, you know, this is going to be somebody they protect, you know, and he really benefited from that.
Yeah.
And he's the golden boy, which, you know, real quick, which is probably another reason why the Pistons get persecuted like they did for what they did, because if they pulled that move on somebody else, it might have blown over in 2 days.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they did it on the guy that turned out to be the GOAT.
Yeah.
So now, you know, you have to, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now you're in trouble. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't mess with the GOAT. And because they did, they get looked as a dirty team. They get looked unfavorably. And, you know, that's an excellent way to pull it all together, man. The Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boys Pistons, Dennis Rodman was just a freak of nature. Jose, man, any last words you want to share with the public?
No, I'm just, you know, thank you for listening. I keep looking forward to doing these while we are still in quarantine, you know, and we'll just keep talking about, you know, all the sports that we love. And, you know, I hope everybody enjoyed it. And, you know, and thank you for listening. That's all.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. And you know what? I really appreciate everyone who's been tuning in. These have been a lot of fun. Jose and I have been able to chop it up and talk about sports, which is something that we love. We're going to keep bringing this to you. So stay tuned for the next one. Until then, peace out.